The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio by Shaq. There's lots to talk about today. A little later on, Pablo Zabaleta will be here to talk about his fellow countryman Martinez and his shenanigans. Should we call it that, Shaq?
Okay, we can go with that.
As of course, Manchester United lost 1-0 against Aston Villa thanks to that missed penalty from Bruno Fernandes. We'll start, though, in the big game in England. Chelsea taking on Manchester City. City beating Thomas Tuchel's side by 1-0. Gabriel Jesus' strike proving to be the difference between the two sides. As welcome Don and Jules to the show. Jules, I want to start with you because you were at Stamford Bridge for this one. What a statement this was from the defending champions.
You're right, Dan. Huge win, and I think Pep Guardiola was saying it at the end, but with such a lot of happiness because not just the win, the way they won it, the way they played, the way they pressed, their counter press as well was fantastic. Collectively, the tactics too. I mean, we said enough before this game that last season, three games against Thomas Tuchel and Chelsea, three defeats for Pep. That at times tactically he was undone by Tuchel, and today was the other way around. Tuchel make a decision to go with three defensive midfielders and go from the 3-4-3 to 3-5-2. That didn't work out, and he apologized at the end saying the defeat was on him. And on the other hand, Pep with City, who played literally the whole game in a 2-4-4 formation, which left Diaz and Laporte 2v2 against Werner and Lukaku. But that was perfect because Chelsea never got into the game because City set up so well and played so well.
Don, a lot of question marks, haven't there been over Manchester City leading into this tie, considering some lackluster performances, including that draw against Southampton? Boy, did they silence their critics today.
Never write them off, Dan. Never write a Pep team off. They were incredible, I thought, today. Jules is absolutely spot on. They were brave. You were trying to figure out who was going to play in what positions. Phil Foden played as a false nine. But they did. They played two at the back and 4-4, and the two were very brave, going up against Timo Werner and Romelu Lukaku. So they were brave going man for man. But it was more the tempo. I think when you look at Man City's performances this season, there's been some good ones. Obviously, they beat Norwich 5, they beat Arsenal 5. But that felt as though, commentating on that game today, Dan, that was the Man City that we've seen before. Chelsea, from minute one, they couldn't get out their own half. You felt as though they had to have 12 passes to get anywhere near the halfway line. The press from Man City for 90 minutes was intense. It was incredible. Kyle Walker was unbelievable. Cancelo was fantastic. Jesus, Rodri in the middle of the park. But a special mention, I thought, for Bernardo Silva, who I thought absolutely ran the show today. And he was easily my man of the match and well-deserved from a City point of view.
I don't think anyone was writing City off, Shaq.
No.
But there were question marks around them.
Understandably so. Listen, for me, I thought Chelsea started really, really well. And you look at how Tuchel lined up, and the inclusion of Timo Werner came as a little bit of a surprise to me, at least. And what how Chelsea were able to craft a couple of opportunities early on is, despite the City press, that long ball was always on with the pace of Werner, and we've spoken about the running of Romelu Lukaku. But from the time City adjusted to that, from the time they started pressing higher up and not allowing Chelsea that long ball out, all of a sudden, you saw Chelsea be the ones to struggle with ideas. How do you get that ball into the front two? How can we get any kind of support from midfield? And they kept coming up blank. And in the end, City were allowed to play their game. And Chelsea were the ones who were looking around for ideas in how to cope and not being able to find any. They bring on Havertz later on. But at this point, City have already kind of dominated and taken control of the entire game. So credit to Pep Guardiola, credit to City for how they were able to adjust to the surprise, I'm going to assume it's a surprise from Chelsea tactically, and then just totally dominate. Because two very good teams, and in the end, only one really looked like they were ever going to win it.
Is it as simple as tactics as to why Chelsea looked so timid today, Jules?
I just thought he got it wrong, and we've never said that Thomas Tuchel got his tactic wrong since he arrived at the club, but this time he did. This is the team that, well, the formation certainly, that played the second half against Spurs last weekend, and that was the right call at the time because of the way that game was going. They didn't win the second ball. It was a big battle. It was very aggressive, very physical. Today was a very different game. I don't understand why Thomas Tuchel thought it was a good idea to go with Kovacic and Jorginho and Kante in that midfield, because the way they beat City last season in those three games was because the two number 10s that played behind the striker last season, which is not Lukaku, but the strikers, that's who caused a lot of problems to City, because they played between the lines, because when you played from the back, they always offered an option, always offered a solution. Today, with just Werner and Lukaku, you had none of that. And that's why City pressed them so well and prevented them from playing from the back like they usually did. There was never any option apart from playing long, and that was unsuccessful for a large part of the game. And that's why Chelsea struggled so much. And I'm glad Tuchel recognized his mistake after the game, but it's just not the kind of mistake that I expected him to do in a game like this.
City still need a centre forward, Don?
It's going to be a talking point every week, isn't it? When they win, they don't need one. When they come up shy, we're going to say they need a number nine. I think, in all honesty, I think if they do want to win everything, Champions League, Premier League, I think they do need a number nine. But what it showed today was it showed how good Man City are, and the individuals. Phil Foden first game back, Kevin De Bruyne first game back. They got a good 80 minutes into their bank. So it just shows you, with the way Guardiola coaches his team and improves the players and whatever positions they want to play in, they can go the distance. And if they can beat a team like Chelsea today, who I thought respected them too much, it's the first time I've seen a Chelsea side that respected Man City a little bit too much. I wouldn't say they were afraid of them, but in the three previous wins that Thomas Tuchel's had, I thought he was on the front foot. I thought he was aggressive. Today, I thought they were a little bit timid. To answer your question, I still think they need one, though.
I tell you what, Jules, something you should appreciate, I suppose, after that time out because of the pandemic and because of no fans, you saw that atmosphere today and it looked awesome.
It was incredible, and I have to say and give credit to the Man City fans, because the 3,000 that travelled from wherever they live were just incredible. And I think for Chelsea fans, I think very early they realised that this was going to be really tough, and this was going to be an off day at the office. And I think they were right, because the Chelsea fans were maybe not as vocal as they usually are, especially on those big games, because I think they saw very quickly that this City team was going to be so good and so solid and so hard to beat. And on the other hand, I think the same was said about the City fans, but on the other hand, I think they could tell very early on that their team was on for something quite special, and they were. They could easily have won 3-0 that game, okay, maybe 3-1, but Chelsea had no shot on target. For the first time since Thomas Tuchel took over last January, zero shot on target, and at Stamford Bridge we're talking, and it's not just the tactic that went wrong, it's the way City played and actually made Chelsea not play the usual game that led to that start.
I tell you what, it turned out to be a very good day indeed, didn't it, for Manchester City. Not only did they get the win at Stamford Bridge against Chelsea, they saw their City rivals lose against Aston Villa. Oh, we talked yesterday about penalties not being awarded for United. So inevitably, there would be a late penalty awarded. But look at Martinez here, the Aston Villa goalkeeper, pointing at Ronaldo, saying, I want you to take it against me. Now, this is all while Bruno Fernandes has the ball in his hand. All this furore, all these mind games are going on. Bruno Fernandes then steps up, and it's a terrible penalty. He skies it so badly, and of course crucial as well, because in the end Manchester United lose against Aston Villa by 1-0. That's 3 defeats in their last 4 matches, by the way, in all competitions. Don, what did you make of all of the mind games and skullduggery that was going on ahead of the penalty?
I absolutely loved it. Why wouldn't you get involved? If you're Martinez, why wouldn't you get involved in saying to Ronaldo, I want you, I want you, I want you? All mind games. He got in Bruno's head. And listen, even when Bruno steps up, you still fancy him. I mean, credit to Mike Dean and the VAR team for spotting the handball on Courtney Hawes. It was a definite handball and a definite penalty. But I must admit, when Bruno stood up to take it, I thought he'd have the bottle. I thought he'd do one of his little shimmies or a little stutter and tap it in. But the pressure got to him. And I think it's still travelling, the ball. I mean, honestly, it was a mile over the crossbar.
Hey, Pablo, those Argentines coming in and stirring things up. What a year it has been for Martinez, of course. Key in their success in Copa America and one of the best goalkeepers in the Premier League as well.
That's nothing to do with the Argentine, Dan. We love mind games. That is part of the game. Listen, nothing wrong with that.
I know, and it works as
listen,
well.
This is probably
what a year it has been for Martinez, eh?
Behavior that we have lacked for years, you know. And he also did it in the Copa America against Yarrimina, I think, against Colombia.
Yeah.
And he paid off, you know, he worked. So you clearly can see today he was shouting at Ronaldo, you know, in front of Bruno. And, you know, he was absolutely lovely as well because, you know, I know Emiliano. He's been in England for so long. I think he's one of the best goalkeeper for me in the Premier League right now. So credit to him for those things.
Shaka, did you get involved in those sort of shenanigans?
No, I didn't. I was.
You should have done.
I'm trying to reassess that. No, I'll tell you what. As much as we make about the mind games and what it, the toll it took maybe on Bruno Fernandes, it also says that me, the goalkeeper, Martinez, I am confident standing here. I do not feel this pressure. So it's a double-edged sword in putting off Bruno Fernandes and also announcing that I am confident in between these sticks here.
Yeah.
And you see the result.
Yeah. The result,
absolutely fantastic.
The result, of course, now is everybody questioning who will take Manchester United's next penalty, or which Portuguese will take it, Bruno Fernandes or Ronaldo. I tell you what, since he's joined Manchester United, Fernandes got a fantastic record. 22 out of 24 he's converted, much better than Ronaldo's, in fact, during that period, 21 out of 26. Pablo, who's taking it in your eyes?
I think Cristiano Ronaldo is a real boss right now at Man United. You know, even Bruno is really good at taking penalties, but I think Ronaldo is there and at some point we'll see him taking penalties. Just because I think he's the kind of player for Manchester United right now, especially in this moment that they're not getting results, that he will step up and you know, and will try to take penalties. I hopefully Bruno will not be upset of that, but Cristiano Ronaldo obviously is probably the main man for penalties.
Why didn't he take it today, Don?
Ronaldo? I'm not sure. I mean, listen, it's one of them where he thought the spotlight's going to be on them. It was interesting that Ollie got asked the question afterwards, who's your designated penalty taker before the game? And he sort of ducked it a little bit, Ollie. And he just said the boys sorted them out. We had a penalty taker before the game, so Bruno was going to take it. But I guarantee you, he won't be on the next one. There's not a chance Bruno will be on the next penalty. As Paolo said, you know, Ronaldo's going to be on the next penalty. He's going to make sure he gets his numbers up. And for Man United, how many penalties they get a season? You know, it's an easy, 7 to 10 goals for Ronaldo? So he'll be on the next one for sure.
Just the one goal in this game, and that was shrouded in controversy as well. It came from an Aston Villa corner. Question marks as to whether or not there was interference here, Shaka, on David De Gea.
Yeah, well, first of all, question marks as to whether it was actually an Aston Villa corner, as the replay showed it came off Tyrone Mings last. This one is a difficult one. From the side, it looks like David De Gea is being infringed. But when the header, once the ball leaves the head and you look at the two players, you just feel that David De Gea has a clear sight of it and is no longer being impeded. That could have gone either way. So I'm not critical of the referee in this circumstance. Had he given it the first time of asking, I don't think VAR would have overturned any decision. The goal standing or it being a foul. I just don't think VAR would have overturned the referee's decision.
Don, do you agree?
I do. I think it's one of them, Dan, where it'll polarise opinion. It'll split opinions everywhere because initially Ollie Watkins was standing in the front of David De Gea and there was a little bit of bodily contact. So therefore, you can say he was impeding him. But the minute it come off Courtney Hawes's head, you're seeing Ollie Watkins peel away to sort of his left-hand side. And then you're looking from De Gea's point of view. He had a lot of time to see that. I'm not saying it was a goalkeeping error. I'm just saying I don't think in the end it was an Ollie Watkins offside stroke interfering with the goalkeeper. I think they just about made the right call.
The other aspect of this, Dan, that kind of convinced me that, yes, I have no problem with it standing, there's absolutely no reaction from David De Gea. Means he sees it all the way. At no point does he feel that he's being impeded. I think that says as much as anything as to why the referee was right to let it stand.
All that excitement around signing Cristiano Ronaldo has somewhat deflated over the last couple of weeks, Jules. That's, of course, now 3 defeats in their last 4 matches. You thought with Varane, Jadon Sancho, the return of Ronaldo, cometh the hour for United. They haven't quite lived up to that so far.
No, that's true. And I still think that it's still difficult with the ball. And you can have Cristiano, you can have whoever you want in your team. If your patterns of play, if what you do with your ball is not structured and precise, you're going to struggle. The last 2 games, 55 shots they had, 10 on targets. Already, we've said for a long time now that the decision-making on shots is dreadful. They shoot from anywhere, everywhere, often in the wrong position, often in the wrong decision. And that's not Ole's fault, that's not Solskjaer's fault. It's just the way those players. But I still think that if there was a bit more structure to the game with the ball going forward, a better pattern of play, they wouldn't be in the situation where almost desperately at times they just shoot. They shoot from 20 yards, 15, 25, 30, 35, right, left, anywhere. Anywhere, and something might happen to it. And I just don't think it's good enough. And certainly when you've got that squad, this is not good enough. And I think that the last 3 games, young boys already, even Newcastle to a certain extent, but certainly the last 2 games, even with 2 different teams, you saw that with the ball, it's not good enough, and they have a lot of work to do with the ball.
How can you have all this exciting attacking flair on the pitch, Don, yet nothing much going forward?
I know, they need to be more patient. There was 28 shots today, and I think it was 27 against West Ham in the Cup, but the shots on target tally is really low. 4 today, and I think it was 5 or 6 against West Ham in the Cup, so what they need to be, and you're telling world-class players to be a little bit more patient, but they need to be patient. They can't, as Jules said, you know, it looks great. Ollie said after the West Ham defeat, oh, we had 27 shots. That sounds good, but when you know the game and you're going, well, you're shooting from 35 yards, there's no real threat to the goalkeeper. So they need to, their patterns of play need to be a little bit sharper. They need to be a little bit cuter. You know, Sancho needs to do a little bit more. He's going through a little bad run of form. Granted, not much game time. But you can't really make excuses for them, Dan, because they've got so much and so many weapons going forward. Their goal tally needs to improve big time. And they've got, in the next 2 or 3 weeks, including the Champions League, they've got some big games coming up. I think they've got Liverpool, I think they've got Leicester, and I think Everton in there as well. So some tough fixtures for Man United.
What a match we saw between Brentford and Liverpool in the late match on Saturday in the Premier League. Brentford took the lead after 27 minutes. Quickly, Liverpool responded to make it 1-1. Salah then made it 2-1 early on in the second half. It was Brentford's turn to respond then. A wonderful goal from Curtis Jones to make it 3-2. But late on, Visa with the equaliser as it finished Brentford 3, Liverpool 3. Don, what a game this was.
Oh, head-scratcher if you're a Liverpool fan, because you think, how have you not won that game? But at the same time, Jurgen Klopp got asked the question, did Brentford deserve something out of the game? And he said, absolutely. I think the frustration for Liverpool fans watching that game was, at 3-2, Mo Salah had a real easy chance and it was too easy for him. You know, Sadio Mane put him through on the angle. It was an easy left-footed finish. He tried to be a little bit cute. He was too complacent. He tried a little dinked finish that landed a yard over the crossbar. But at 3-2... with a team like Brentford, who at home, they throw all the balls in the box. They throw long throws. They throw corners in the box. They're really, really direct. They've got 2 centre-forwards who put you under pressure. And when you try and analyse the game, is it a couple of points drop? Well, it is. But at the same time, when you draw 3-3 in a cracking 6-goal thriller, you just accept that. And I think as a neutral watching that game, you just think, what a cracking game of football. What an advert for the Premier League.
3-3 then is how it finishes. Just taking a look at why it was such a good day for Manchester City, seeing Liverpool, Chelsea and United all drop points around them. Everton, meanwhile, the victory against Norwich moves them up to 5th in the table, just 1 point off Liverpool at the top. Those 4 teams, Don, I suppose the 4 we're expecting to see at the top of the table come the end of the season. Overall, Manchester City, I think, out of everyone, will be happy where they are, considering everything that's been said about them leading up to today's game.
Totally agree, Dan. It was a statement win for them. I think if you remember back to last season, not at this point, a little bit later on. They were languishing down in 13th, and I said to, I had an argument with Craig on ESPN, I went, they can't win the league. There's no way they can come from 13th and win the league. And they went, I think it was 21 games, straight wins or unbeaten. So that's what City can do. And it's normally against Chelsea, not under Thomas Tuchel, because he's won the last three, but before Thomas Tuchel arrived, Chelsea fixture for Man City was their sort of, was their fixture for them to lay down a marker and get going. And I just feel as though they'll do exactly the same with that win today.
A lot of love for Chelsea, of course, the way they started the season, Jules. How much does this result rattle them?
It does a bit, and Tuchel won't like it. As much as he's apologised and taken it for himself, he won't like it. He won't like some of the players' performances. And again, when you've got Romelu Lukaku in your team, how can you not play to use him as in the best way possible? How do you not play to try to benefit his strength to the maximum? And we saw City concede 3 goals against Leipzig. Almost every time Leipzig were attacking them, putting them under pressure, Leipzig were creating something. And yeah, in the end, it was a heavy defeat as well for Leipzig. But that showed that if you go at them, and a bit like Chelsea did in that second half, certainly more than in the first half or the first hour, you could see that something could maybe happen. But for an hour, Chelsea were far too deep, far too fragile with the ball. And again, not using Lukaku enough. And if you're Lukaku tonight and you are at home and you're thinking like, what just happened? Why was that just a passenger? Because the ball hardly got to him. And again, when I think when you've got a player like him, even against City, you should try to build a bit more with the ball around him than just use him, hardly use him like they did today.
Don, you mentioned it. Take a look at this. United's run. Villarreal, Everton, Leicester, Atalanta, Liverpool, Spurs, Atalanta and Manchester City. That is all between now and the start of November. There's no break. There's no rest. There's nowhere for United to breathe. And we know what it's like when you are a manager of one of the biggest clubs in the world. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has been back this summer. You continue this bad run and questions are going to start to be asked a lot more, not just from us here in the studio.
Well, that's right, and that's the nature of the beast when you manage Man United. But you can't feel sorry for them because they've got one of the best squads, I think, in the Premier League. They've got so many options. Cavani was back today. You know, the list goes on and on and on when you think, you know, offensively what they've got. In midfield, they're strong. They lost Luke Shaw today through an injury. Harry Maguire was struggling towards the end of the game. But you still look at where Man United are and the tools that Ollie's got to work with. And he would be feeling it because I guarantee you, I know managers. Shaka, we've worked under managers at West Ham when they produce a block of fixtures and they say to you, right, what we're going to get in the next fixtures. So they will have a plan and Ollie will have a plan on where the next six fixtures are and which personnel he's going to use. Sir Alex Ferguson was the greatest of them all. You're telling players, you're going to be selected in this game. I'm going to rest you for this game because this one's important. And the psychology of it's going to be important for Ollie. But listen, when you're managing Man United and you're going through 3 defeats in 4, you've got to make sure you pick up a lot of wins coming up. Otherwise, you are severely going to be under pressure.
October is going to define Ollie, isn't it? And Manchester United, Jules, you feel?
I think so. And I don't think he's in trouble because I think they will keep him at the club even if there's a bad run. I don't know if they lose all those games that we've just mentioned from Villarreal, the next one, to the City after the 2 Atalanta games in the Champions League. If they lose them all, I don't know what will happen. But certainly you know that this is not what the Glazers are going to do. They would have sacked him already if they wanted to sack him. So I think he will still be in jail. Maybe that's a good thing for him not to feel that sort of extra pressure or your position is in trouble. However, he needs to do in his results, but he needs also performances to improve. Again, this is just not enough with the ball and without the ball. Luke Shaw got injured today. Harry Maguire got injured today. I'm not sure what kind of team they're going to field against Villarreal in the Champions League in a game that is huge now already after the defeat against Young Boys in the match day 1 of the Champions League. So it's going to be incredible to follow closely what happens to United and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Big picture, meanwhile, what do we learn about Liverpool today, Don?
Not too much. I mean, it wasn't a trend.
You can see
what
3 goals against a newly promoted side.
Yeah, I get that, which is a bit of a blow, but it hasn't been a trend, has it? They only conceded before that in the game against Chelsea. So there were clean sheets galore before this game. Yes, you analyse the game and you come away, you think, well, Brentford, we should be beating them. And rightly so. Liverpool, if they want to win the league, they should be beating Brighton. But I think sometimes you've got to walk away from a game and smell the game and go, do you know what? That was a brilliant game. We can move on. The fixtures for Liverpool are big coming up. Their next fixture in the Premier League is Man City. That's all they'll be looking forward to. They'll be looking to the Champions League this week, then Man City. So, listen, it's one of them where if they beat Man City, and I'm surmising that they do, they beat Man City, they draw against Brentford, all of a sudden you go, that's not been a bad week. But it puts a little bit more stress on the City game.
You agree, Shank?
Yeah, without question. Listen, playing against newly promoted teams like Brentford, who start well, are always have this unknown quantity about them. You're not quite sure what you're going to get. They're at home, the emotion of the situation. That's always a far more difficult prospect than just seeing, are we playing against a newly promoted team? You concede three, this Liverpool team will not concede three against very many. You take that as a one-off. Thankfully, you found the goals up at the other end. At least you can get a point. As good a day as it has been for City, Liverpool started the day in second place, finished the day in top of the table. You take that knock on the chin and you move on.
Thank you very much, guys. Don will be back with us for Extra Time, which you can always check out over on our YouTube channel.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Some big results in Italy on Saturday. Milan with a 2-1 victory away against Spezia. Meanwhile, finished Inter 2, Atalanta 2. And it was also a score draw between Genoa and Hellas Verona. Let's just take a look at how those results affect the table. Milan, top, 1 point clear of Napoli. Meanwhile, Inter third after that thrilling draw with Atalanta. For more on that, let's welcome in Gab Marcotti. Gab, this was a game that had pretty much everything.
It had absolutely everything, Dan. You said it. Two teams that really went at it. Atalanta probably with most of the initiative, but with Inter counter, as they so often do under Simone Inzaghi, countering with so many men with so much quality. Nicolò Barella showing today why he is perhaps the best midfielder in Serie A, and for my money, one of the best midfielders in all of Europe. Inter, I think, thought they'd huffed and puffed. They thought they were finally going to break through towards the end when Demiral was whistled for a handball. Upstairs steps Fede Di Marco, who's done so well. He's kind of the surprise penalty taker because he's still considered young. And then he sort of smashes it against the crossbar. Atalanta go up the other way. Piccoli putting it away for what they thought was a winner. But again, VAR correctly intervening, because Samir Handanovic had weirdly kept the ball, or the ball went out of play as he was weirdly trying to keep it in play. So a real heartbreaker there for Atalanta. But 2-2, I think, probably a fair result in one of the most entertaining games you'll see all year.
Yeah, it was a great match. Meanwhile, Spezia taking on AC Milan, Gab, and all about a certain Daniel Maldini.
Yeah, some kid named Maldini scoring a header. Obviously now three generations of Maldinis have scored for Milan. Listen, I'll tell you what, when this guy first broke into the first team, there were all these people kind of like, you know, chuckling, oh, well, if his last name were, say, Daniel, if his name were Daniel Thomas, say, instead of Daniel Maldini, would he be here? Well, he's hung around. He gets on the pitch. He plays in the hole behind the striker in the Brian Diaz role, if you will. And he scores a goal. And, you know, I think he's growing. He's dealing with the pressure. He's growing nicely. He has less hype than his dad did when he broke into the first team and less hype than granddad did. And that's okay. That's totally fine. Plus, if Ale Moreno would be around, he'd be pleased because, of course, mom is from Venezuela.
Oh, there we go. He'll be hanging his hat on that for sure. Gab Marcotti, as always, thank you very much. A lot more from Gab, as always, on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which, of course, will drop on Monday. Meanwhile, in La Liga, Real Madrid have been scoring goals for fun at home. Couldn't, though, convert against Villarreal over the 90 minutes as it finished 0-0. For more on this, Pablo Zabaleta is still with us. And welcome Casey Keller to the show as well. Pablo, I want to start with you, mate. Overall, a draw, probably fair?
Well, I think yes. I would say that for me, Villarreal was great. You know, tactics have been great. You know, defensively, we said before the game that they are really difficult team to play against. It was really difficult for Real Madrid to create chances. They've always been defensively very compact. They have a couple of great chances in the first half to take the lead. They missed it. And then in the second half, I think they've been good. And it was, well, probably I expected goals today. But I think a draw was fair for both teams.
Yeah, especially Casey, considering what 11 goals Real Madrid had scored in their previous two home matches coming into this match. But in the end, you could argue their man of the match was Thibaut Courtois.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%, Dan. I thought Courtois had to be at his best, particularly in that first half. If he's not, then Villarreal get a goal or two and then show just how compact they are defensively, how good they are defensively, and have the pace to get out on the counterattack. So Courtois had to be smart, made a couple really key saves. I thought Camavinga came on and helped give some energy into what was a very lackluster Real Madrid midfield, particularly in that first half. And they got better, Real Madrid, but just had no answers for a very compact and very well-organized Villarreal defense.
Key word there that Casey used, Pablo, which I think is relevant here, is energy, which Real Madrid seemed to be lacking, particularly in that first half.
Absolutely. I thought it was Camavinga in the second half. He brought a little bit of that energy sometimes that you always need to play these kind of games. When you look at Villarreal with Coquelin and Capoue in the middle, plus Parejo, they got that physical presence that they always very well balanced in the middle of the park. You know, they didn't really give a chance to Modric and some of the players, the most creative players, to do something in the final third. And then they've been always really well organized, and it was very difficult for Real Madrid.
Overall, Casey, obviously Eden Hazard then comes in the second half, doesn't quite make the impact that Real Madrid would be hoping for. But overall, I suppose, considering the way the other results went today with Atletico losing, of course, against Alaves, a point maybe not the end of the world for Ancelotti's team.
No, not the end of the world, but I think anytime Real Madrid's at home, they feel they should be winning a game, regardless of who they're playing against. And, you know, we know that this Villarreal side has had a few too many draws this season. If they had turned, you know, some of those draws into wins, they'd be right up there at the top. We heard Darkie and Stewart talk about, you know, that this Villarreal side will be higher up the table when this season shakes out. And we could see that from a very good performance today. But Real Madrid, when you are Real Madrid and you are home, you just expect so much. You talked about, Dan, earlier, just how they've been, you know, filling the goal up at home the last couple matches. And today, you know, they had to work hard. They had to work hard for the opportunities that they created from a very talented Villarreal side. And so I think there still are some questions for Ancelotti, particularly in that midfield. We knew that they were going to be a little bit older. We knew that they didn't quite have the legs that they've had in their past. When you look at the Modrics and the Bales and the, and obviously the Hazards and what his form's going to be, Casemiro as well, not the youngest. And so he's going to have to find that good balance to make sure that they don't get overrun in midfield like I felt they did in the first half.
Well, speaking of questions, a lot, of course, surrounding Ronald Koeman and his tenure at Barcelona. A big test for him once again tomorrow in a match that is live on ESPN+. Barca against Levante, 10:15 Eastern. A win for Bayer Leverkusen today saw them move up to second in the Bundesliga table. Meanwhile, in the big game, it finished Borussia Mönchengladbach 1, Borussia Dortmund 0. For more on this, let's welcome to the show Jürgen Klinsmann. Jürgen, Gladbach, good for their win today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they really deserved it. It was a feisty performance by Borussia Mönchengladbach. I mean, it was not a great game. You know, most of it was kind of a midfield battle. They kind of eliminated each other, especially the first 30 minutes. And then all of a sudden, you know, the goal from Zakaria opened things up. It was a little bit a confusion there in the Dortmund defense, and Zakaria wanted to play a 1-2. Actually, he did it then with the Dortmund player. Ended up in a beautiful finishing from him, and that opened the scoreline. And afterwards, Dortmund did never really find ways to put Mönchengladbach in real serious trouble. And you could see that without Erling Haaland and Marco Reus and Giovanni Reina as well, it's not the same Dortmund side. You know, they were not, there was not enough quality on the field really to turn this game around. And for Borussia Mönchengladbach, it's a big win. And you could saw the fans there. It means a lot to them beating Borussia Dortmund, obviously. And it was interesting, feisty, hard-fought game. But it cost Dortmund 3 points in the race for the title.
Yeah, most certainly did, as you say, missing some key players in that game. Meanwhile, Jürgen, we know what the managerial merry-go-round is like, and there are already questions, weren't there, being asked of Jesse Marsch. He certainly helped silence some of his critics today.
Yeah, thankfully so. No, Jesse, a 6-0 win over Hertha Berlin was highly impressive. It was a very entertaining game. Christopher Nkunku, who scored 2 goals, was the man of the match. He was all over the place. A very inspiring kid to watch. And so they deserved. They deserved also the 6 goals. They were clearly the better team. And for Jesse, it is an important win. Not because maybe here and there they were a little bit critical with him, but also kind of looking forward into Champions League now, the upcoming weeks. You know, it was important to make that statement for Jesse.
Meanwhile, Jürgen, how excited should we be over Florian Wirtz?
I think we should be super exciting about Florian Wirtz because, I mean, in that such a young age, you know, to be already at 10 goals after such just a short period of time, 6-7 games, and that's pretty cool. I mean, that's exceptional, and obviously that will be interesting now to watch him over the entire season, you know, how he will develop, how mature is he already to deal now with all the compliments that he's getting from all over the place. He's already part of the national team. So this is a very exciting German kid coming through the ranks.
Great stuff, Jürgen Klinsmann. As always, thank you very much for joining us. Just a reminder to keep up to date with all the latest news from the Bundesliga. Be sure to go over to our ESPN FC YouTube channel and subscribe.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
And that's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. A lot of people, Shaq.
It was a lot.
It was
a hectic show. I'm exhausted, Dan.
Well, don't be too exhausted, Shaq, because extra time is still to come, and it's just you and Don.
I'm going for a little lie down. It's you and Don.
You have to carry some of this show for once.
Lie down.
Be sure then. So stay tuned. Extra time is next. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweet. Shaka Hislop with us in the studio. No time to lie down. Now, Don, in my absence, you've changed location. Where are you these days?
Yes, you used to be at a computer
with a dead plant.
Yes, it's all gone a little bit posh. I've been banished now to the garage.
I was previously
in a bedroom, so now I've had a garage converted into one quarter office, three quarters gym. So it's I need a little bit of paint on the walls behind.
Right.
So it's just been plastered, but apart from that, it looks pretty cool.
Can you move the camera and show us the rest of the garage, or is that just going to cause chaos?
I certainly can. I've got on a little plinth. So
okay, here we go. Oi, what's in those files? Dodgy tax returns.
Tax forms, paper really all that nice. Sort of rubbish.
Those weights haven't been moved for a long time.
If you want to buy that, that's on eBay for 150 quid.
Well, what is?
The cabinet thingy,
little French, what do they call it? Noir, whatever they call it. 150 quid on eBay.
Don't try it.
There you go. What, if you sign it, Don, I'll definitely buy it.
Hang on, we've got a treadmill down here.
Never used.
Hang on.
That's for the wife and the twins.
And some weights.
Weights and treadmill for the twins.
And some weights. Lovely, Don.
So it's getting there.
Nice little inside. I like it.
Well, there you go. So a bit of paint on the wall. Nice. I think it'll look pretty good.
No, it's an improvement.
It is.
Right. Shaka, did you ever challenge or provoke opponent players like Martinez did to Ronaldo before the penalty?
No, I didn't. I just wasn't. That's just not my nature, Dan.
Martinez, clear if you've got it in.
It was so good. Did you see Ronaldo's reaction as well? Ronaldo just stayed out to the way. He's like, I'm not getting involved in this. Look at what was going to happen here. He knew.
Don, does it really make a difference, though?
Yes, it does.
Really? All that shenanigans? Do you think it got into Bruno's head?
That and the fact that Ronaldo is putting him under pressure because he knows Ronaldo's standing behind him thinking, if I miss this, I'm under pressure. And then Martinez leaves a little bit on him as well. I mean, the most I think I've ever got into someone's head or tried to is actually saying, I'll bet you some money you miss this penalty. I'll bet you 50 quid you miss this penalty. And all of a sudden, it just puts them under a little bit more pressure.
That 50 quid is the big difference maker.
There you are.
It didn't quite work. When someone's on £50,000 a week.
Did you pay is the question. So if you bet somebody 50 quid during the game and they missed, would you pay after? Would you go fire them and give them the 50 quid?
I wouldn't go find them, Shaka, but I would pay them 50 quid.
Well, Don's very generous. Remember, he goes to rest stops.
Oh, that's right. Did that guy miss a season anyway?
Don, what is the percentage chance of Ronaldo taking the next penalty?
100%.
100%? No doubt.
Yes, that was easy.
For everyone, is Manchester United still considered as a title contender after today's defeat against Aston Villa? What do you think, Don?
The reason why they are not title contenders, and this is not just before the defeat against Villa, is because the other three teams, I hope I'm not being harsh, well, I probably am, but I'm being truthful. The other three teams have got elite managers. Ollie's not an elite manager. So he's got an elite squad of players to work with, and that's why the pressure is always going to be on him if he loses a game.
I totally agree. As we've all said, it's down to four. I think to start the season, I had Manchester United as finishing fourth. I don't think that changes any.
Don, why did Tuchel take such a pragmatic approach against Pep City today?
I think he respected them too much, Dan. When the teams actually come in, I actually thought he'd done the right thing by flooding that midfield, but it just took an extra body away from the top end of the pitch. I thought the Timo Werner
Putting him in the starting 11 was the right thing to do because he caused havoc with his runs in behind. It was the fact that, you know, they couldn't get a stranglehold on the game. It all pointed towards, like, Thomas Tuchel made an error with his starting 11. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. And I got asked the question on social media, that was Chelsea's, was that Chelsea's poorest performance of the season? And I went, no, because Man City didn't allow them to play. There's a little bit of a difference. I thought Man City were incredible, Dan. Coming away from commentating on the game, it felt as though that was a proper Pep, a proper Man City performance. There was so much analysis done over at the Premier League on every time a Chelsea player got it, there was three or four Man City players wrapped around them, stopping them from playing. So I thought they were exceptional, more so than Chelsea being poor.
Brentford looked like the Leeds from last season, Don. Can they continue upsetting big clubs? Is it just a case of new club unknowns at the start of the campaign?
Humble pie from me, because I tipped Brentford and Watford both to go down at the start of the season.
There's still time.
Pardon?
There's still time.
No, there's still time, but I think they've showed them what they've done against Arsenal and showed them what they've done against Liverpool. Like, going to Brentford is not going to be easy because they're quite simplistic in terms of what Thomas Frank wants them to do. It's not like they've got a fancy little number 10 that'll drop in the pockets. They play two number nines that get right up against the centre-backs. They work hard on midfield. They put lots of crosses in the box. The place is a hard place to go because their fans are quite intimidating and they're brand new to the Premier League, and it's quite an emotional sight when you go and watch Brentford because they've got the young and the old. We've seen the youngsters and the old gentlemen in tears when they win a game, and I just think it's a fascinating story. They might do a Sheffield United or they might do a Leeds where teams might figure them out, but in the meantime, I think enjoy them.
With Everton's good start in the Premier League, can Don take back his comments about the hiring of Rafa Benitez as Everton's manager, saying it will all end in tears?
Well, I thought before the show started, Dan, you said me and Xhaka were going to carry this show. There's a lack of carrying from Xhaka.
Well, the questions are for you, Don.
Go ahead, Don.
Well, what am I supposed to do? Can Don take back his comments? I'm going to ask Xhaka to take back your comments on your behalf.
Xhaka,
go ahead, Don. You're all right.
We're still trying to sell your armoire.
All right. Is there any bids?
No.
50 quid.
All right.
But you have to pay them.
All right. I'll bring it down from 150 to 120 in the space of about 2 minutes. I still think it will, Dan, but I said at the time, it might not be a Rafa problem. He's trying to compete with the top four that are ridiculously strong. Then he's trying to get Everton into a European spot ahead of the likes of Leicester, ahead of the likes of West Ham. So even though he's had a terrific start, it's one of them where what's the expectation? Is the expectation to be six or seven?
So do you take back your comments that it will all end in tears?
No, because at some point I think it will. Now, it might be a year's time, it might be 2 years' time.
You say it all end in tears. That sounds like a short term.
It might be in 12 years' time. Yeah, that's a cop-out.
Every manager's going to get sacked eventually, aren't they, Don?
Well, I stand by it then. I stand by it. It will end in tears.
Well, you can say that
to everyone.
Oh, it's going to end in tears. Every single manager appointment.
Well, it's not going to end in tears for Klopp or Thomas Tuchel or Pep.
Of course it will.
How?
Because it always does.
What with Pep and Klopp?
Yes. At some stage, it will go wrong at Liverpool. It will go wrong at City.
How many times has Jurgen Klopp been sacked? How many times has Pep been sacked? None. None,
so
I think, is the answer.
That's it. So it didn't end in tears at Dortmund?
Just a little bit.
Oh, dear.
Come on, Shaq, get involved.
No, it's OK. I'm good.
Which city, Xhaka?
To Don's pressure.
It's all right, it's okay. Which city did you actually enjoy living in and exploring during your playing career? Which city did your family enjoy living in the most during your career?
Southampton, when I was playing for Pompey.
Yep, because I live there.
Okay, that's
what year were you in Southampton?
I was playing for Pompey 2002 through 2005.
I was there, Shaq.
I didn't see it.
Can I come and visit it?
No, it's okay.
Stand low.
It's okay.
Being nice.
I loved it. I loved it there. In a little town called Wasash.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's nice. New Forest nearby.
Correct.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Lovely ponies wandering around.
I mean, there was a bunch of students used to be running amok in the city centre. I never ventured down there with them kids. them rowdy kids, them rowdy stupid kids.
Good shooting.
Those pesky kids.
Good time.
Those pesky kids.
Done.
Chaos nightclub it was.
Oh, goodness me. You see what I tell you?
I bet Dan was rocking that jacket back in the day as well.
It's one of those where the walls were sweating.
Oh, goodness me.
That's horrible. Oh, my God. What about you, Dom? Which city did you enjoy living in the most?
I love living in Liverpool. I was 17 and a half, 18 when I signed for Liverpool, and I had 4 years there as a single lad, living in the Albert Dock.
Oh, dear.
Chaos. There's a nightclub round the corner called Cream, which is just a magnificent nightclub. Played house
Sweaty
music,
walls?
Restaurants. Pardon?
Sweaty walls?
No, it's classier.
No. Cream wasn't classy. Cream was like the Hacienda of Manchester. Cream was house music and a little bit sweaty and a little bit grimy, but it was like the music was amazing.
Red velvet rope, though. Red velvet rope for the Liverpool players.
That was in the next door called the Continental.
You can see Don front of the line.
Yeah, in his candy
Guys, trust me. There was a nightclub literally next door called the Continental, and that's been there for like, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years, and all the Liverpool big timers, all the Liverpool players, Johnny Barnes, Glenn Hussein, all the big hitters used to go to the Conti.
Steve Nicol.
VIP, straight upstairs, some garlic king prawns, nice few beers, looking down the dance floor. Yes!
Now we're living.
That was their dish. You knew you made it at Liverpool when you went upstairs for a plate of garlic king prawns and a beer. That's when you knew you'd made it.
When you first moved to Liverpool, didn't you used to go to Kenny's house to watch some matches?
Yeah, that was a little bit tragic. So on a Thursday night, a random Thursday night, Canal Plus used to show French football, and Kenny being Kenny, just such a gent, used to phone Jamie Redknapp, and we were in digs together. He used to phone Jamie and say, what you is Don doing tonight? Well, in you were in digs, we're doing nothing. Come round, have some pasta and watch a bit of French football, where it was absolutely amazing. But like, you've got to try and remember, like me and Jamie, I was 18, Jamie was 17, 17 and a half. We were like nervous wrecks. Because like, you're going around to Kenny Daglish's house, he's trying to talk to you. I'm struggling to understand a word he's saying. I'm just fake laughing. I'm fake laughing at everything he's saying. I couldn't wait to get out. I was just too anxious. I was too nervous.
Final question. Don, what's the dressing room like when your whole team is in a poor run of form? How do you get out of it?
Well, me and Shaka both can answer that question. It is hard work, Dan. It is.
Yeah, I bet.
Do you know what it is? It's characters. And Howard Kendall was a great one. Howard Kendall was a great manager for saying, whatever happens on a Saturday, do not bring that into a dressing room on a Monday. And it was the best bit of advice ever, because you could come into a dressing room on Monday and you could be off the back of something like 5 or 6 straight losses. You're not going to come in chirpy. You're going to be a little bit doom and gloom. And it needs just 1 or 2 characters just alive in the dressing room. Me and Shaka both played with John Moncur, who was the best ever. You know, it didn't matter if John Moncur didn't play a minute. He was lively, he was fun, he had loads of energy. And you could feel down and John would play a prank, and all of a sudden you get going and you forget about the Saturday, and then you look forward to the next game.
No question. I think the big... You need the experienced players to step up.
Right.
In those circumstances. Those players who've kind of been there, seen it, done it, and know that everything turns around.
Okay.
And you rely on them to kind of break the tension in the dressing room. And then you get one win and it just blows the lid off all the tension that had been building up. And that you know when you turn that corner.
That's it, we're done. How much longer to go on the auction for that wonderful piece of antique?
It's down to 90.
Buy an armoire and get a treadmill for free.
There you go. Exactly.
Brand new treadmill.
Just chuck in a couple of Scottish caps as well.
I'll have a couple of plastic plants.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. Ship it as well. Tom will drive it. 100 mile radius. That is it. Thank you very much. ESPN FC will be back on your screen tomorrow. What's happening tomorrow? Barcelona, Levante, North London, Derby, RBM, ESPN, Don't worry, Shaq.